The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Trevor Dan. David Lloyd's Radio Moments and Roy Martin's News Roundup to come. But first, a tale of poachers turned gamekeepers. These days it's quite fashionable, isn't it, for former musicians, indeed actual musicians, to become DJs and presenters, particularly at BBC Six Music, where you can hear Lauren Laverne and Jarvis Cocker, Guy Garvey, Kerris Matthews, Tom Robinson. It reads like a playlist from an old John Peel show. Well, if that show had existed, two other bands we might find on the playlist would be the Salford Jets and the Undertones. Well, two members of those august combos are now doing radio shows very regularly, and we're going to talk to both of them. Mickey Bradley made the Radio Today news last week because he's been signed up to do another new show for BBC Radio Ulster. Mickey, how are you?
I'm doing great, Trevor. How are you doing?
Excellent, thank you. And let's say hello as well to Mike Sweeney, former Salford Jet, now doing the breakfast show at Real Radio XS in Manchester.
All the best to you as well, Trevor, and a ton of other stuff on the radio now as well.
Because where else are you working these days?
I'm doing a specialist music programme for Smooth 70s, the national station, and I've just launched Sweeney's 60s Classics on the BBC on Radio Manchester.
Excellent stuff. Mickey, let me come to you first. John Peel used to say to me that he was pleased he didn't know anything about music. He couldn't play an instrument. He didn't know one note from another, because he said that that made him a good presenter because he was one of the audience. Now, do you think it's useful in general that you do know something about music or that you don't?
I don't really think it matters, because everybody loves records, everybody loves music. You don't have to be a musician to know any great insight into it. We can decide, yeah, I like this as a fan, or I like this as a musician. And most of the records that I like, most of the records anyone likes, you like them as a fan. You don't have to know anything about being in a band. Doesn't necessarily do you any harm, but I don't think it's certainly not a necessity, and shouldn't be a hindrance either.
What do you think, Mike?
I would half agree with Mickey. For me, I can split myself into two. So when I very first started interviewing people, which is 32 years ago, the very first person I interviewed was a girl called Helen Shapiro, who I'd been a big fan of when I was 14 and 15 years of age. So the fan part of me was right at the front, and I just really appreciated what she'd done for me pop music-wise before the Beatles came along. But when it comes to interviewing bands and musicians, the fact that I've been in a band, for me, helps, because you can sometimes get a link with somebody in a band because of a shared experience at some point during your career.
Yeah, that's for interviewing, though. But for playing records, for choosing to play records, you choose the records as a fan. And I think once you're a fan, you're always a fan, because I interviewed Kevin Godley, 10cc, and you know, the filmmaker. He was in Derry last night. I interviewed him for one of our culture programmes. And, you know, I had to say to him, listen, I'm a huge fan. He was very, very gracious about it, and I think he's probably used to it. And I asked him who he would be a fan of, you know, who in a similar position. He says Bob Dylan. So that's the kind of level that he's operating at.
When you were in the Undertones, Mickey, and you were trawled round, as I'm sure you were, by various pluggers to do interviews at lots of radio stations, did you find that a satisfying experience?
I was always very grateful, just that, first of all, they were interested in it. Everything in the Undertones, I have realised, it was all just about making the rest of the band laugh. So that was my audience. You know, if I was doing an interview with Fergal or Damien or John, and you made them laugh, you know, you enjoyed it. You make allowances for DJs who really don't care, for presenters who you just see as, you know, the last item before the news. And you can't really blame them for being like that. You just go along, you just enjoy it. You know, it's not the most important thing in the world.
Mike, have you ever, even though, you know, you're a man who doesn't take prisoners and you're a big character, have you ever had pop stars who've done that classic terrible interview with you where they just don't seem to want to be there and they don't help you at all?
Do you want me to name names?
Go on. I'll start. The Rue Betts.
well, mine was recently I interviewed Mick Taylor. And I said to him, let's talk about your time in the Rolling Stones, to which his answer was along the lines of, I'd rather not talk about that, which effectively was the end of the interview. He's now, of course, appearing live on stage with the Rolling Stones again, which I found quite ironic. Two of the guys from Quo came in once, so much the worse for wear, and it's only happened maybe that once ever. And we were live, and I said, listen, guys, I don't think you particularly want to be here, I said, and maybe we can continue this conversation at another time when you're in a better state to actually do the interview. That's the only time I've ever done it live on air. But I've had a couple of guys in. I remember Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull, and my first question was, what was the song that changed Ian Anderson, the young man, into Ian Anderson, who wanted to be in a rock and roll band? And his answer was, I've never considered myself ever in a rock and roll band.
Nice one.
Which, yeah, exactly.
What about you, Mickey? Have you had some horror stories?
No, I must admit, I haven't. I don't interview that many, certainly don't interview that many musicians. And no, I've never heard that. And I'm glad to hear that story about Ian Anderson, because I never liked him up until now. And I was obviously right in my judgment there.
Mickey, this new show that you're going to be doing for BBC Ulster, how are you going to pick the records for that?
I'll just go into the front room and see what's there. See, I had a programme last year. I'm a staff producer in Foyle and Ulster as well. So I think I was, you know, they brought me in just because, well, he knows a bit about music, you know. Last year I was doing a punk show. It started about 07, it ended last year. And I kind of set myself parameters. I decided nothing after 1990. And which is a bit of a cop-out, really, because it meant that I didn't have to listen to new records. But with this one, it's more wide open. Punk and everything that fed into it and everything that came out of it, you know. So we're very lucky. We don't have a playlist. We don't have anyone really kind of putting restrictions on you. So it's kind of whatever you feel works as well. I think that's what most presenters do. You know, you just know, is this a record that I genuinely like and I would feel right playing, and I'm not playing it because someone suggested it, you know.
How does it work for you, Mike, on Real Radio XS?
We've got a massive playlist of thousands of songs within the classic rock genre, which can literally go from The Undertones right through to Metallica, and all stops in between. I mean, we can literally, and we did this morning, I think we went in from Nine Inch Nails into Neil Young. So it's a constant voyage of discovery for me, that just listening to stuff and enjoying it. The two specialist music programmes, though, this is where I would agree with Mickey, the 70s programme and the 60s programme, I choose every single tune, and I choose those tunes as a fan and with a real love for the music. And I've got to say, very Anoraki attitude, you know, along the lines of, that's quite rare, I'll play that. That's not been played for a million years, I'll play that, you know. Where Mickey is with his stuff, my specialist music programmes have that freedom.
Sorry, can I ask you, Mike, do you have a... Because I did this, and I think I might be the only odd person doing it. Do you take a record of all the records you play and put them on the kind of spreadsheet to make sure that you don't play them within 5 or 6 weeks, or is that just me?
You're going to laugh at me, Mickey. I write them down on pieces of paper and look and literally print the sheets out and check through.
Is that because our memories are gone?
No, I just do that. And with a lot of stuff, I've been doing it that long, that I actually have like an inbuilt... it's the only part of my memory now that works properly. Whereas I think, no, I'm sure I've played that in the last 2 or 3 months. I mean, the odd one sneaks through, but generally, no. I exactly where you say then, I make sure I've got plenty of sheets and plenty of information around to check where the stuff's come from and when it was played last.
Mickey, you mentioned that you're a staff producer for the BBC in Derry and across Ulster. What makes a good producer of a music show from the other side of the microphone?
Someone who can trust the presenter and who realises that the presenter is there because the presenter has a love of music. And you just know it's really there to support. And what I always, whenever people ask sort of what does a producer do, I say sometimes you can do nothing because you don't have to do anything, and sometimes you do a lot of it because the person really needs you. So it depends on the presenter, but the best thing is you trust your presenter, and if you don't trust your presenter, then there's a problem and you have to really sort out that problem, you know.
What do you think, Mike?
Mickey's a proper gamekeeper and poacher if he produces and presents. My producer on The Breakfast Programme produces me for 4 hours non-stop, and I love it. And he trusts me, and I trust him. So he puts me into the parameters, and I deliver the product. On the 70s programme, on the 60s programme, my producer's there just to make sure everything works technically. And again, it's because they trust me implicitly to bring in 3 hours of music, and it's going to work. But I've got to say that I choose that stuff. And Mickey's quite right. If you've got a lack of trust between the production staff and presentational staff, you've got a fundamental problem. You should be able to work together in real harmony.
Mike, are you still working as a musician? Because I think I've read recently that the Salford Jets occasionally do a gig.
We do a gig a year. We did Minehead the other week with, like, the members and Eddie and the Hot Rods and that. But I still work. I've got, like, a roots band, and we play, like, almost acoustically, rootsy R&B, bluesy, folky, country stuff, which I've just started doing over the last year. I love doing the Jets, like, once a year, but we've not got the same back catalogue the Undertones have got. I mean, whether it's Wednesday Week or Jimmy or Teenage Kicks, they've got this brilliant back catalogue. And if I was singing with the Undertones, I'd want to be singing 2 or 3 or 4 times a week, whereas we had one hit.
Number 72.
And it makes a difference.
What about you then, Mickey? How often are you on a stage?
Well, we seem to be playing about every 4 or 5 weeks. Sometimes, you know, because I work, and because some of the other guys work as well, you know, we're talking weekends or working on your days off. But nowadays we're slightly more selective, in the sense that, you know, we play in nice places. We're playing in a couple of weeks' time. We're playing in Brittany. In fact, a couple of weeks ago we did a garden party for the President of Ireland, who's a really cool politician, if such a thing exists. He's a published poet, Michael D. Higgins, and we were down and we played in a marquee. We did about 4 songs, and it was just a great experience. So it's that kind of thing, you know. It's the shows that you fancy. You go, yeah, I wouldn't mind that. And then if everyone can agree and agrees not to fight, then we'll do them.
Just as an aside, Michael D. Higgins is, I think, one of the few politicians actually celebrated in a pop song, isn't he? Didn't the Saw Doctors write a song called Michael D. Rockin' the Doyle?
Yeah, absolutely right, Trevor. Yes, he is that cool.
I've got one bugbear, Trevor, as a musician, and I'm going to air it now, especially with Mickey being on the programme. The Salford Jets didn't have a massive back catalogue, but we did record a couple of real classic sort of punk forward slash new wave forward slash power pop songs, Gina, I've Got a Cortina, and Who You Looking At, and neither of them ever get on punk compilation albums, and it really bugs me. All these years on, it really bugs me.
Why does it not get on compilations?
Honestly, Who You Looking At got in the top 75, albeit only for a couple of weeks, and it's a classic punk song. I have absolutely no idea. It's as if we sort of fell between the cracks in the floor at some point.
Look, Mike, we're going to sort out some therapy for you. You'll be fine.
I need it, man.
Get over it. So here's the big thing then. Both of you know what it's like to do successful radio shows. Both of you know what it's like to come off stage, having entertained people for a couple of hours. What's the most exciting of those two? Let's start with Mickey.
I think coming off the stage, you can't beat it, because you're also, if you're in a band, you see, you're all together with your friends, and you can sort of say that was good, you know, you have all that. With a presenter, even though you have a backup team, it doesn't quite match that thing about being in a band, that you've been in the band with, you know, with guys from you were 15 years old. So off stage for me.
What about you, Mike?
I think Mickey's probably right. It's two different sets of emotions. We did a gig the other week at a blues festival, and we're playing mostly original material, and people didn't know it, and they went bananas, and there's nothing that is in any way comparable to that. We came off the whole band and hugged one another, grown men, because we got such satisfaction. I think making radio programmes, and I don't know how Mickey feels about it, what you do get is a sense of professional satisfaction, and it's more of a... Going off a stage, it's adrenaline-fueled, and you're full of emotion. Whereas with a programme, it's more a warm glow, and you think, yes, that was a really good programme. Those are good songs, and I've acquitted myself well today.
Yeah, the other thing as well is you can swear on stage.
Yes.
This is an online podcast, Mickey, so help yourself.
Didn't you know, Mickey, where I am on a rock station, I would say there's more leeway for me if I wanted to be a bit cheeky. But on all the time I've worked in radio, I've never felt that it's necessary to do that. And I don't mean that I'm over conservative, but I've actually felt that on a stage, dead right. On air, I feel there's no, I actually feel, nah, there's no need for that.
No. Absolutely.
Let's finish by plugging your current work then. Mickey, when does the new show start on BBC Ulster?
13th of August, which is happens to be my birthday and Fergal Sharkey's birthday as well.
Well, happy birthday to both of you in advance. And what time of day is that?
It's 8 till 10.
Also online somewhere near you on demand.
I would hope so.
And Mike, when are your shows broadcast these days?
Real, I do the breakfast programme 5 days a week, Monday to Friday. That's 6 till 10, and that's on FM in the north of England. But it's an iPhone app anywhere in the world. It's online anywhere in the world. And I do Sweeney's Million Sellers for Smooth 70s, which is a DAB national station, 7 till 10 on a Sunday evening, and present Sweeney's 60s Classics. We just started the first one last week on BBC Radio Manchester, 12 noon till 3 p.m. on a Sunday afternoon.
Two legends on the stage and behind the mic, Mickey Bradley and Mike Sweeney. Thanks so much for joining us today. This is the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan. We'll have David Lloyd's Radio Moments after the latest radio news with Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme.
Thanks, guys. BBC Radio Lincolnshire has gone viral. It's created a massive lip-dub video in the centre of Lincoln to a couple of Take That songs. It must have taken a dog's age to produce, but it looks fantastic. See the video on YouTube via Radio Today's website. David Jacobs is stepping down from his long-running show on BBC Radio 2 at the age of 87 for health reasons. He's not retiring completely, though, as the station says he'll still be presenting some special over the coming months. And Ashley Tabor has become an honorary graduate of the University of Exeter. See his graduation picture as the doc in this week's edition of eRadio. And that's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Dr. Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
Thank you, Roy. For this week's Radio Moments, let's join David Lloyd.
We start this week looking back 58 years, and a milkman from Coventry joined the BBC.
Yes, this is our fifth birthday show, and the stars who've come along to join us in the party are, for the first time ever on British radio, the Everly Brothers, Frank Ifield, Kenny Ball's band, Joe Brown, Clinton.
The voice of Brian Matthew. He got his BBC door key this week in 1955. It's often when a presenter is off ill that others get their chance to shine. When Kenny Everett called in sick to Radio 1 this week in 1969, they asked this chap from BBC Trails to fill in.
This is Noel Edmonds saying, sincerely, I do hope you've enjoyed the last 2 hours and 5 minutes of my kind of madness. Have a wonderful weekend, have a lovely tomorrow. I hope it's windy and you drown in your boat as well.
Noel Edmonds hurrying from the Sound Trails department and going on air with Radio 1 this week in 1969. Exactly a year later, he took over the show when Kenny was fired.
It's little Kenny. Ah.
This week last year, a new BBC station. BBC Radio 5 Live Olympics Extra was born, using capacity on the BBC's national DAB multiplex by reducing the quality of Radio 2 and 4. It's 20 years this week since the first presenter of commercial radio's network chart stepped down.
We were up against, head-to-head, the BBC Radio's flagship programme on Radio 1, you know, the Top 40. And but I thought that maybe you could do a chart show in a slightly different way, and maybe with the collective responsibility of all the marketing and promotion departments and all the commercial radio stations around Britain, we could actually do something.
Kit Jensen, who'd launched what became the network chart with Nescafe and the first fully networked programme.
Hi, I'm David Jensen. Join me this Sunday afternoon for the Network Chart Show. From 4 o'clock, we look back at some of the biggest hits from the past few years.
You probably remember that show being in mono at first. It was fed down the IRN line. There aren't too many benchmarks in radio which have lasted the test of time. One is the Golden Hour, which listeners still always call Guest of the Year, whatever you decide to call it. And the second, also owed much to Simon Bates.
Okay, so we'll change the names, David and Sally. Those are the names we'll use.
Our tune made its debut on Radio 1 this week in 1980.
She found out where David was living and went to see him. And she begged him to come home.
The feature lives on to this day on Smooth Radio, showcasing beautifully just how good radio is at telling a story.
By this time, of course, all the staff in the hospital knew exactly what the story was, that Sally had married a bisexual who'd committed himself to a gay relationship and left her in the lurch with a baby.
On that first morning, 33 years ago, Simon told the story of how Sue met Steve and a holiday romance began. This week, we really should honour Marconi. He died this week, 76 years ago.
Fin dal 1895, all'inizio cioè dei miei primi esperimenti.
The voice of Marconi, who had arrived in England aged 22 with his mother and a case of PP9 batteries, no doubt. He died this week in 1937, aged 63. Thanks, Marconi. Well, as this year's quarter two Radar audience figures are prepared for us in some dark back room, let's think back 10 years this week, and Kelvin McKenzie, whose company then owned TalkSport, was having a go at Radar. He said, "These charlatans are costing my business a fortune." This week sees the 40th anniversary of that red, white and blue caravan.
Live from St. George's Park in York.
Once commercial radio started in the early 1970s, you know, there was a danger of us being thought of as that station down there in London, whilst we've got a big local station in Piccadilly Radio in Manchester, for instance. So there would be a loyalty to the local station rather than to those posh buggers down there in London who are telling us what to do. So my whole philosophy with the Radio 1 Club and the Radio 1 Roadshow and the weeks out was to get the network out to meet its audience. And, you know, that required a lot of show business, if you like.
Johnny Beerling. Great crowds, though, and to this day, every commercial jock who turns up to three people and a wobbly stage, 10 raffle draws and Dave Doubledeck's on the mic, dreams of those halcyon days. Jingles have changed a lot over the years, but in the 60s and 70s, this effect was well used. The sound of Sonovox, and that effect was first written about this week in 1939 in Time magazine. The effect even featured in a 1940 film called You'll Find Out.
Tonight we present a new miracle of electricity, the Sonovox. Harry Babbitt, using special Sonovox units, gives diction to the tones of the instruments as they play. Harry forms the words, but the instruments sing them. Sing it, Saxes!
I know you anywhere.
Tony Blackburn loves his jingles, and this week in 1964, he arrived at
Caroline! The time on Radio Caroline, Britain's first commercial radio station, 14 minutes to 6. Tony Blackburn here with All Systems Go. And don't forget that at 6 o'clock, you've got your Caroline Club request with Doug Carr. Well, I'm thoroughly enjoying hearing the older hits of the past this afternoon.
The start of the Blackburn career on air this week in 1964. So, with the Home Secretary announcing 25 new independent stations this week in 81, the announcement that Parfitt was to leave Radio 1 2 years ago this week, and Mercury joining Heart Sussex this week 3 years ago, those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! Thanks, David. Credits this week, Roy Martin, David Lloyd, producer Jamie Taylor. That's it from the Radio Today programme, and we'll have more soon.
The Radio Today programme is a TDC production.